Welcome to the Weekly Insight Podcast, where we break down the noise of the week and help you understand the psychology of the markets with your host, Andrew Doerr at Insight Wealth Group.
Good morning and welcome to the latest edition of the Weekly Insight. I am your host, Andrew Doerr. This week's edition, we're going to have some fun. We've got a lot to talk about. I'm sure you've been paying attention. You know, this podcast is being recorded on January 31st, 2022, and last week in the market was a doozy. In fact, the entire month has been a little bit of a doozy. Really, there's been nowhere to hide, so we're going to talk about that. We're going to go through what we heard from Fed Chairman Powell last week and a little bit about why maybe we should take away his microphone. We're going to talk a little more about Omicron. We're going to wrap up this week talking about the Ukraine, because while it's not something we've addressed publicly, it's an issue we've been paying a lot of attention to and one which we think deserves at least a watch in people's portfolios at this point in time. So let's dive in. But before we do, I do want to give one shout out to our compliance department. They would love me to remind you that everything you hear today should not be construed as individual financial advice. We are not making any recommendations on securities. And, you know, just remind you that this should all be done in conjunction with your financial advisor and whatever particular plan they have in place for you. So talk to a financial advisor. But this is more 30,000 foot. What are we focused on? What are we seeing in portfolios? And what are we worried about? So let's jump in. I saw a headline couple weeks ago, worst start to the year ever for the markets. That is a pretty dramatic statement, and one that at that moment technically was true. So we don't have the closing numbers for Monday, January 31st, but we do know how things ended last Friday. And last Friday, the S&P was down about 7.01%. The NASDAQ was in the worst position, down about 11.5%. The Dow was down about 5. Even bond market funds, international stocks, you name it, everything was down across the board. There really has been nowhere to hide from this month. But to say it's the worst ever and it's panic-inducing, not exactly. Certainly not. I mean, we all remember 2 years ago, right? 2 years ago, from February 22nd to March 21st, we got absolutely kicked in the shins. The market was down 35%. So we're sitting here with the market down 7%, roughly 20% of what we experienced before. I think it's important to put a little bit of caution on this and not be nearly as freaked out as some in the media would like you to believe. That being said, there's a lot to talk about, you know, and last week, man, last week was just weird. The way the market was trading, we saw these dramatic intraday swings. I likened it to someone as, and the market was kind of acting like a petulant child before the parent came into the room, and the parent being Fed Chairman Jerome Powell. And so Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we saw these wild swings that eventually reversed themselves, and the market actually was up for the week last week. But it was, you know, this kind of weird Fed-induced psychosis that was happening across the market. And so we get to Wednesday. And, you know, Wednesday during the early part of the day started like a pretty normal day. The Federal Reserve releases their minutes from their meetings at 1 p.m., and the market loved them. The market thought they were great. You know, the minutes, what did they say? At 1 p.m. Central Time, I'm sorry, 2 p.m. Eastern. What did the minutes say? The minutes said that the Fed intends to end their asset purchases in March. We already knew that. The Fed will not be raising interest rates in January, but intends to use interest rate hikes as the primary tool to address inflation. We already knew that. Now, that means, you know, we'll still probably see 4 more rate hikes this year, and they'll probably start in March, but that's already what the market was expecting. And then finally, that the Fed intends to let their balance sheet run off through maturities over time. We already knew that. So basically, the Fed landed exactly where the market expected them to land. And over the next half hour, the market was up. The market looked great. The market looked at those minutes and said, this is what we expected. This is what we were planning for. Let's go. And then Fed Chairman Powell stepped to the podium. And I jokingly say, can we take his microphone away, please? I actually respect the heck out of the chairman. He's done an excellent job managing his way through what is, I would argue, a, you know, something that has never been experienced before by a Fed chairman with what we've dealt with COVID and everything else. But for whatever reason, when he gets up to the podium and starts talking, the market doesn't like it. And it was interesting. It was his prepared remarks. You know, if you watched the market on one side and his comments on the other, during his prepared remarks, the market was pretty blasé until he started taking questions. And then the market was just down drastically for the rest of the day. But what did he say? You know, what did he say that was so disastrous? Really nothing. He just didn't give the market the assurances and the promises that they really wanted to hear. You know, so for instance, one reporter asked him if they might do larger interest rate increases, meaning instead of raising 25 basis points at a time, raise 50 basis points at a time. And he was noncommittal. Well, why was he noncommittal? The committee hadn't discussed it yet. They also asked him if they might do more rapid rate increases, like monthly rate increases. He was also noncommittal. Why? Because the committee hadn't discussed it yet. But that type of answer, the market heard that, and if you could, you could time those answers to the market's downward swings, because the market read that as, well, maybe we can have a 50 basis point increase, or maybe we can have monthly interest rate increases. And so it was this very, you know, kind of weird scenario where he was saying the things that were being said in the minutes, and he wasn't expanding upon those things. And so the market took him not expanding on those things as some inherently bad answer. And so the market really kind of crushed him for the rest of the day. But we would like to highlight something that he did say in the midst of one of those questions that I think was important, because he was talking about inflation and, you know, what might slow down inflation. And he said this. He said, and I'm going to chop up his comments because they were very long, but he said a number of factors are supporting a decline in inflation. Fiscal policy will be providing significantly less of an impulse to growth. There will be relief on the supply side. In addition, monetary policy will be becoming significantly less accommodative. So let's break those three things down, because I think they're really important to understand. Number one, fiscal policy will be providing significantly less of an impulse for growth. For the last 2 years, the federal government, so fiscal policy, there's fiscal policy and there's monetary policy. Fiscal policy is the money Congress spends. Monetary policy is what the Fed does with interest rates in the balance sheet. Congress, you know, Congress did what it needed to do. And the White House, both White Houses, Trump and Biden. We got to give them credit. We needed a rapid, massive amounts of money injected into the system to save the economy from faltering during COVID. They did that. And then they did it again. And then they did it again. And then they did it again. They got crazy with the spending. And so, you know, it's funny. I heard President Biden really point the finger back at Jerome Powell on inflation as though, well, he needs to get this in line. That's his problem. It is. But it was a problem caused by Congress and the White House to some degree. The amount of spending that was done, the amount of money that flew into the economy was many times more than anything we've ever seen before. That's not going to be there anymore. There's no more big spending bills, especially in a midterm election year like this. Congress isn't going to agree on anything. And so this idea that we're going to have massive amounts of stimulus again, not likely. And so that should be something that's, you know, that punch bowl has been taken away, and that should impact how people spend. They're going to spend through that big wad of cash that the government gave them, and when they get through it, they're not going to have any more cash to spend because it's not being repeatedly refilled. The next thing he said, there will be relief on the supply side. Now, he expanded on this later, and he said, listen, the supply side thing isn't going to be fixed this year. It's not going to be done. He thinks it's a 2023 issue. But he did point out that he thought it was going to be significantly better by the end of this year than it is today. And I think I would agree with him. I think our whole team would agree with him. And finally, in addition, monetary policy will become significantly less accommodative. And this is the thing the Fed can control. You know, they can control making asset purchases. They're not doing that anymore, or they're going to be done in March. They can control how big their balance sheet gets, and they can control what interest rates are. So they're going to stop asset purchases in March. How big the balance sheet gets, you know, what he said in his statements was very clear. They are going to let the Fed's balance sheet run off naturally or regularly, if you will. What does that mean? They own a whole lot of short-term debt vehicles of companies, of the U.S. Treasury, and those mature over time. As those mature, the Fed's not going to be buying more securities. So by allowing them to mature, taking the cash and not buying something else, they're shrinking the investment balance sheet. That's how they're going or intending to do it. So that should be a pretty regular wave function. We should be able to plot that out and understand how it's going to happen. It should not have a lot of shocks or wild impacts on the market. So that leaves the last one, interest rate increases. You know, Chairman Powell was very clear. This is the number one tool in their tool bag to address inflation, and they intend to use it. He's hoping that some of these other impacts on inflation make it so that he doesn't have to be as aggressive with interest rates, but I think they're willing to be aggressive. Right now, the market is assuming, call it 4 interest rate increases this year between March and the end of the year. I think it would be very difficult for him to be much more aggressive than that. So the market and the Fed are seemingly pretty much in line right now. That's good news. You know, in terms of what that means for market performance the rest of the year, that should be good news. So that's the Fed. Fed volatility, if you will, should go back into its corner for the next few months until the March meeting. We'll see. But most of the drama should be put away, and now we're waiting for that first official interest rate increase. So once we get past the Fed, you know, then we get into some of the more, I would argue, important fundamental things, you know, earnings. We are a third of the way through the earnings season, and by a third of the way, I mean 33% of S&P 500 companies have reported their earnings as of last Friday. So we have a pretty good look into what's going on with earnings right now. There have been some high-profile issues with earnings. You know, Netflix and Peloton come to mind. And those are the things that make the big news stories. Those are the things that end up on CNBC and everybody's talking about, and it's so dramatic. But are they the things that really matter? And I would argue no. Because when you look at the rest of the market, when you look at the whole market, what have we seen so far? Earnings for the broader market right now are above expectations. 77% of the one-third of the market that has reported earnings has beaten their expectations growth. Have beaten their expectations. That has driven the blended expected earnings for the S&P for Q4 from where it was at the end of the year. So on 12/31, we were anticipating Q4 earnings to be about 21.4%. Now with this additional information we have, it looks like earnings will be up about 24.3%. So that's about 13.5% above expectation. That is significant. Probably even better, though, that while earnings have been going up, the market is down for the month. Now we're starting to see some PE compression in the market. So as of Friday, the 12-month forward PE, or price-to-earnings ratio, for the S&P 500 was 19.2 times earnings. That is the first time it's been below 20 since COVID. And 18.5 is about the normal average. So we're a little high, but to make the argument that the market is completely overpriced is, I would say, a fallacy. There are companies that are completely overpriced, and those companies are feeling the pain right now. We talked in last week's podcast about Tesla. Tesla stock just continued to get beat up this last week. But the vast majority of the market is trading in what we would call a normal forward earnings guidance range, and one that we think is a place where we can invest capital and make money. So earnings are starting to look good. Then you move on to Omicron. You know, as I sit here recording this podcast to you, I've had 2 little kids sick with Omicron in the last 2 weeks. I've currently got COVID, so I'm going to have to wipe down this microphone when we're done with this podcast. But I think the truth is we're all getting it. It is significantly less virulent. We know that. But we've seen a big turn here. Since January 14th, that's when our seven-day case count peaked. It peaked at 807,000, roughly, new cases a day on the seven-day average. As of January 29th, our seven-day average was 534,000. So that's about 33% down from the peak in 2 weeks. That's a big deal. We're clearly moving in the other direction. But important to note, while we've dropped a third of our caseload, we are still two times higher than the highest levels of the highest peak we ever saw on COVID before Omicron. So that's back in December and January of 2021 when we were seeing the peak before we started getting the vaccines. So it's important to remember, you know, this is still serious. We all need to take it seriously. We don't know what the next variant's going to be, but we do know this one's passing very quickly. This one is significantly less virulent. And we've talked in memos in the past about just the sheer number of workers out of the workforce because of Omicron and the impact that was having on the economy. That impact should come off in February, we would anticipate, based off of these numbers. So that should be a very good sign for the economy as well. So the big things that we can kind of control and measure and monitor around right now, you know, as weird and psychotic as last week was in the market, we think things look fairly manageable and reasonable at this point. We think there's probably still money to be made in the market today. Going to have to be, you know, we're going to have to work harder for those returns this year than we did last year. But that's life, right? Most years aren't as easy as last year was. There is one uncontrollable and one unknowable that we want to bring up, and we would anticipate we'll probably spend more time on this in the coming weeks. And that's Ukraine. I don't think anyone knows the answer to what's going to happen in Ukraine other than one guy, and it's Vladimir Putin. There was a great briefing put out last week by, let me get this group, see if I can, I'll try to include a link to this, but it was put out by Stephen Wasilewski, Seth Jones and Joseph Bermudez Jr., and it was a CSIS brief on Russia's possible invasion of the Ukraine. It's an excellent piece that kind of walks through what it might look like, what Russia's alternatives are, what they might do that we're not anticipating, and also how the U.S. and the rest of the international community might respond. Long story short, there's still a lot up in the air. And Putin's going to make this decision. If you had to put me, you know, to making a decision of what I thought he would do, I think it's probably much more likely he's going to continue to use irregular warfare and cyber attacks and all the other tools in his arsenal than it is that he might march into the streets of Kiev. But wilder things have happened. I will just say that this would be the first time we've seen this level of an invasion in Eastern Europe since World War II, and it would be significant. But what would it significantly impact in portfolios? So forget that I'm a freedom-loving guy who, you know, doesn't think that wild dictators should roam the world. If I'm just focused on how's it going to impact your balance sheet, how's it going to impact your portfolio, I think there's two issues, food and fuel. You know, Russia is at best an oil company masquerading as a country. That is going to be the U.S.'s approach, I would assume. Attacking them where it hurts, which is on oil and natural gas, it is going to drive up energy prices around the world. It's a good thing if you own energy, but it is going to drive up costs. On the other hand, I'm recording this podcast in the breadbasket of the world, the great state of Iowa. And if Iowa's the breadbasket of the world, Ukraine used to be the Iowa of the USSR. The Ukraine is a massive food producer for the world. Significantly, for the underdeveloped world, there's a lot of countries in Africa, China, others that get a lot of wheat and corn from the Ukraine. It is going to drive up food prices if there is a Ukrainian invasion. We've already seen it happening in U.S. corn prices. We know that China has quietly been inquiring about buying more U.S. grain to replace what they fear they're going to lose in the Ukraine. And so food and fuel, Food and fuel is what this invasion would impact. Interestingly enough, food and fuel inflation are the two areas that the Fed ignores in their inflation calculations because they say they're too volatile to even calculate. I agree with the Fed when it comes to that conversation, but when it comes to real inflation, how it's hitting the pocketbook of that guy who makes $45,000 a year, Russia invading Ukraine is going to be felt in the pocketbook, and we're going to have to prepare for that. So we'll see what happens. I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about this. With that, we're going to wrap it up for this week. We hope you have a wonderful week. We hope we have a week that's got a little less Fed psychosis and a little bit more normal market movement. And we'll be back to talk about it more next week on the Weekly Insight. If in the meantime you'd like more information, please don't hesitate to give our office a call at 515-273-1333 or visit us on the web at www.insightwealthgroup.com. We hope you're well. Have a great week. Take care.
Securities offered through Arete Wealth Management, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, NFA. Investment advisory services offered through Arete Wealth Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment firm.